That's right. Karen, my wife, is laughing already. She doesn't laugh. She doesn't think I'm funny until right before I hit record. And then I say, here's what it is.
Yeah, you have to tell the whole story.
I hit.
Y'all, you ready to go? I'm all, yep. And then I clear my throat as he's hitting the start button, the record. So he's like, not going to do that one.
No, that's not how it went down. Yes. That's not what I
saw. They're
going
to believe me over that's you, everyone.
All I said is, recording now, and then she starts
But that's
laughing.
No. That was the second round. So the first time, he starts the recording as I'm clearing my throat. So my throat is the first thing you're going to hear me going.
No, because.
And then he stopped it. And then he's like, recording now. So I would know to not make it.
What you didn't know is that first button was me just testing the audio track. I didn't actually hit record. I just tested the audio level to see if I had it loud enough. And then I'm like, yeah, that's good. So I stopped it. You're clearing your throat. I wait till you're done. And then I say, recording now. I hit record. And then you just start laughing.
Okay.
Anyways.
Two ships passing in the night.
I'm doing this thing over here with the board. Karen doesn't know what I'm doing over here, but she...
I was distracted with my paper.
Either way, this is the Dirt Bike Channel podcast. This is Kyle Brotherson here. I'm your host today. I've got my lovely guest host wife in the office with me. I always say office. I say studio.
It looks like a studio.
It's like the most ghetto little studio ever. But it's our basement. That's what we have. We use what we have. We use what we have. And this desk, we're sitting at this desk right here. There's a guy named Carlo, and he's making me a custom desk. And he just texted me some pictures, and I'm so excited. Because,
thanks, Carlo.
Because Carlo's making me a custom desk. We tried to do it. Me and Karen tried to do it.
We don't need to get into that. They're here to talk about Supercross.
We're going to talk Supercross today.
Hello.
So, sorry, this is the Monday Morning Mechanic podcast. And in 2020, we were pretty good at this. We did it pretty much every round. This time in 2021, we've been really bad at it. And part of the reason is because sometimes they'll have three races in a week. And so
that
it's
just
like,
too
and
much.
then with the kids, it's just like by the time, you know, they're all to bed. So here we are on a Sunday afternoon. It's 4 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. And Karen and I we're like, hey, let's do this before we get all tired, before the kids go to bed.
So it's actually daylight right now.
It's daylight. It is very nice. It is very nice. So we just had round 12 of the Supercross season yesterday.
Such a stressful race.
It was Arlington 3. So... as Cooper Webb said, we're glad that Texas is a free place and letting us race because they had six races in Texas. You realize that?
Yeah.
Like, think about that. There's only 17 rounds and six of them were in Texas.
Thank you, Texas.
So California wouldn't let them race. There's a number of places that wouldn't let them race because they're scared of like everyone getting the Rona or something.
Hey, we're finishing it strong in Utah though.
But yeah,
we're two rounds.
Yeah. See, last year, they finished like six or seven in Utah and nobody really loved that. Utah. I mean, I love living in Utah, but I don't think Supercross liked Utah, but it was the best place that they could do it. And so
the weather's a little tricky.
Yeah. You never know. And then it's riding at altitude and everyone complained about that. And they complained that there was no nightlife, but it's not like you're going to go do nightlife anyway. If you're the riders, I mean, you got to like focus on a job. And so They've done some interesting things with the Supercross this year, and even the next three rounds, they got a couple week break, but the next three rounds are going to be in Hotlanta, but they're not doing it at the Mercedes-Benz Dome. They're going to the Atlanta Motor Speedway, and it like if you haven't looked at the track maps, in fact, Karen, I need to show you the track maps here in just a second.
If you show me the track maps, that's going to make me
you
want.
You talk for a second so I can pull up the track maps.
Okay. If you show me these track maps, though, it's going to make me want to go. That was one of the places I picked to go and travel because we like to go to as many as we can squeeze into our busy lives. And so I said, let's go. Let's do it. And now that he's pulling this up, we might be on a plane in a couple of rounds. They're doing three. Okay. We're doing three. Those are some fun ones. They're really long And
okay, yeah. So here's
long and skinny.
Here's the first one in Atlanta. Let me just click through some of these pictures. If you guys haven't looked at this, if you go to supercrosslive.com and then /track-maps, there's links there. But you can see this, Karen. Like, so this is just one of them. They're like these huge long rhythm lanes because they're kind of doing it in the infield, like the grassy infield area, kind of like what they do at Daytona. But this is just, and so that's one. And if you look here, like look at this one. Here's the round 14. Look at this. Look at these rhythm lanes. They're so just like
they're really
forever.
Long, and then they've got some really tight turns.
Yeah,
and then they're really long again. It's kind of fun.
A lot of well, there's a few 90s and a few, you know, 180s, but these super, like, look at this rhythm. So you come out of the start right here. Can you see that? You come out of the start and you've got like super long rhythm, and then maybe like a wall check, like a speed check, finish line jump, and then like all these rhythm lanes here.
How many rhythm bumps is that?
Well, I mean, from the start, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. I mean, it just keeps going down.
So about 18 in one direction.
And then you do this sweeping 180, and then you just come down. I mean, I think this is going to make for, it's going to be some really interesting, and look at the rhythm down here on this side of it, like huge, huge rhythm lane down here, go into the sand and then come back through. So
I can't see that though. You know, yeah, these poor podcast people.
Well, the thing is, just go look at it. Yeah,
Cool.
Go look at them. There's some really cool maps that they're going to do in Atlanta. So it's pretty cool. In the last three rounds, they were in Arlington, Texas. And the first round in Texas and Arlington won. I don't think many of the riders loved this start because it was a really short start with a 90 degree turn, which riders kind of hate. And then the second Arlington, it was a longer start straight, a really long start straight actually, but it seemed like the riders haven't really been digging with most of the tracks. But then this last one, this Arlington 3, which was round 12, which happened yesterday, people loved that. Like, they loved it. Remember, we were watching, well, I don't know if you saw it as much, but I was watching qualifying practice with the boys in between basketball games that we were running around with one of our, with our 10-year-old. And
juggling a Saturday.
Yeah, they had Justin Brayton, and he was on with the Race Day Live guys like Daniel Blair, and I can't remember who else. I can't remember the other guy's name. Sorry. But Justin Brayton was just salivating over the track, and he couldn't ride because he's hurt. He's got like a broken hand, or, you know, he got injured a couple weeks ago. But he was just talking about how there's all these amazing, I guess Ricky Carmichael was there too. They were talking about like all these amazing, you know, options that you had in these rhythm lanes that they had in this last track map. And you saw Ken Roczen and Eli Tomac and Justin Barcia and Cooper Webb just doing all these crazy things, like trying different combos and everything. And there was a lot of different combos, and so they loved it. It was one of the tracks that seemed like it was hard for some of the guys, but they were like, hey, this is finally a supercross track, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was cool. They enjoyed it.
Yeah. So who was the fastest qualifier?
Oh, I didn't print that. Let me look that up.
Because I remember thinking to myself, okay, is this Ken Roczen's race? Is he going to win? Because that's all I need. I'm like, because there's 12 points between him and Cooper Webb. And I just kept thinking, okay, you got this, Kenny boy. And so, but then as the race went on for the main, I was noticing that Roczen was really struggling in the sand section. And that was kind of like making, you know, the little bit of a gap with him and Cooper, but in the qualifying, it looked like he was doing really well. Ken Roczen was, and it looked like he had really fast times. I can't remember who it was.
Okay, so fastest qualifier. Sorry, it took me a second to figure that out because I usually don't look for fastest qualifiers. Number one qualifier was Chase Sexton, actually.
Oh, yeah.
So Chase, so for those of you who don't know how this works, I know there's a ton of people that listen to this that aren't as into Supercross as we are. If you're a Supercross fanatic, you know, anyway, this is a good refresher for you. I just about told you to turn off, but I'm not telling you that.
No.
You don't turn off right now. So you've got throughout the day,
they
usually have a just kind of like a track walkthrough, and then they might have a practice where they just go, you know, out and do a few laps. And then they'll typically have two different qualifying practices, like where you're actually going out there and putting a fast lap down and try to get your times the fastest around the track. You have two if the weather's good and everything works out, you usually have two different qualifying sessions, practice sessions or whatever. And the reason why that's important is the fastest qualifiers then get the first gate picks. And that's important because of the ruts that will, you know, develop in front of the gates. And then the line that you have down to the first turn, you don't want to be too far inside. You don't want to be too far outside. Every track is slightly different. And I mean, you could make an argument on what's best. But anyway, so Chase Sexton ends up, and Chase Sexton is a rookie in the 450 class. He won the 250, one of the 250 titles last year in the 250s. And so he comes and he's had a rough go because he got injured a few rounds ago.
I like him though.
Yeah, he's a cool kid. So he qualifies fastest. And then Eli Tomac, which we're going to get into later, Eli Tomac qualified second. And then Ken Roczen qualified third. Ken is typically not, historically, he's not the best qualifier. He's a better racer than he is a qualifier. He was third. Then
which is good because he shows up when he needs to.
Yeah, and then right? He had Dean Wilson qualifying fourth, Cooper Webb in fifth, Malcolm Stewart in sixth, Jason Anderson seventh, Justin Barcia rounds out number eight. So that was our qualifying for the day. And then they break them up into two different heat races. In the heat race last night, I think I'm pretty sure Ken Roczen go out there, wins his heat race, rode really well. He actually passed Cooper Webb. Cooper Webb was leading the heat race, and Ken Roczen comes out, passes him, and guess who else passed him? Chase Sexton passed Cooper Webb, actually put him down on the ground, which I said when I saw it, I'm like, Chase, that's probably not smart.
He did say that. And I was like, he didn't even like, you know, maliciously, he wasn't like ferrandising him. Is that a verb now?
You just turned it into a verb.
I think I did. But either way, I just thought, you know, he was trying to get it done. He's a new guy on campus and I was rooting for him.
Yeah, well, and the real reason, maybe I shouldn't say, but the real reason Karen wants the, and I don't blame her, I'm with her. Karen wants Ken Roczen to win.
Yes.
And she wants.
You were going to get to the point where you were saying, you know, you didn't want, you know, Chase Sexton to knock over Cooper he's like the guy that you don't want to like have on your bad side.
Yeah, there's a few
against you.
There's a few people I think that you could get away with that on. Speaking of Chase Sexton, if you're going to take some, and not like he did it, it wasn't like he
maliciously or
really
anything.
Like slammed him down or anything, but he made an aggressive enough pass on Cooper, which I mean, Cooper's hard to pass. So I'm not even blaming Chase Sexton. Chase Sexton didn't do anything wrong, but he made an aggressive move, got tangled with Cooper Webb and Cooper went down. And my point is this, a lot of people, you could just, okay, that's fine. That's not fine to do that to Justin Barcia. You're going to get killed.
Bam, bam.
You're going to get killed if you do that to Justin Barcia in the next race or the next time he's right by you. And with Cooper isn't like a bam, bam Barcia, but he also is just mean enough. You don't want to piss him off. I mean, you just don't. You don't want him to get as mad as a hornet. He said that one time a couple years ago. He's like, I'm mad as a hornet. You don't want, if you're going to race Cooper Webb, the last thing you want him is mad because he's meaner than you and he's
got mental toughness like nobody's business.
In some ways, he's better than you. And so you don't want to give him any extra motivation, which Ken Roczen this year, he has been on the receiving end of just this mental barrage from Cooper Webb. And I asked Karen last night, I'm like, is there anyone mentally tougher in the sport right now than Cooper Webb? And I ask you that right now, Karen, is there anyone tougher than Cooper Webb? And if there is someone who's close as far as like mental toughness.
I mean, without knowing everyone's personal stuff, you know, like what's really going on in all of their lives, just on the surface, I would say no one is tougher than Cooper Webb mentally because, I mean, lots of things can happen to him and he still gets right back up and he pushes and he shows up in the main and oftentimes it's in the end of the main when he's like turning it on when everyone else is starting to fade. Cooper Webb is really pulling through right at the end. And I think that is where the mental toughness comes is if you think about if you're running a mile, right? And it's not the beginning that's hard, it's the end. And so proof is in the pudding. I think with Cooper Webb, he's really shown how tough he is mentally.
Yeah, it's interesting because just like you said, Karen, Cooper Webb, A lot of times he's not the fastest qualifier. In fact, he hardly ever is. He's hardly ever the fastest qualifier. And even in the heat race, she laughs. I pushed one of these buttons on the thing. Even in the heat race.
Dramatic.
Even in the heat race, typically speaking, Cooper Webb isn't the best. The thing about the heat races, though, is they don't pay.
Correct.
And the other thing about the heat races, because here's what happened in the heat race. Ken Roczen comes out there. Ken Roczen is an amazing rider, and I want Ken Roczen to win the championship. In the heat races, he only has to race for 5-6 minutes plus a lap. And that's when Ken Roczen is still strong. Where Ken Roczen starts to like fade a little bit is towards the end. And guess what? That like the problem is that's right when Cooper Webb is getting stronger. Cooper Webb gets, I don't know, it probably isn't that Cooper Webb gets stronger. It's probably just he doesn't fall off like the rest of the people. There's something he does with his mind and his body where he doesn't fall off and he's able to push it harder. And so in these longer main events, like, yeah, Ken Roczen goes out there and he races well for 15 minutes. He was flawless. Ken Roczen was flawless, efficient, flawless for 15 minutes. Problem is the main event is 20 plus a lap. And so right when you start to, Cooper Webb has been pushing you the entire time. And then right when it's the hardest for you, when your lungs are on fire, when everything in your body is telling you, no, stop, I can't do it anymore.
Cooper Webb, he kicks it into another gear.
Cooper Webb is able to silence that. So what you're hearing, if you're Ken Roczen or just anyone else other than maybe Eli Tomac for the last few years ago, you're hearing these voices in your head that are so loud that are just saying, you got to dial it back a little bit. You can't go like this. You can't continue to push your body and your lungs and your mind this hard, this long.
And your heart. Yeah.
But Cooper Webb has found a way to make that voice a little quieter. And so he's not being affected by it as much. You can't say that these guys aren't in shape. And I would never dare say that Cooper Webb is in better shape than anyone physically. But there's something about those end of those races, those end of those mains, where he doesn't care if he beats you. He doesn't care if he leads the entire race. He can follow you the entire time. And then he is going to kill you on the last lap. You know, he's going to figure out a way to pass you. He'll be in your head just enough.
He's going to kill you.
He figures out a way to just get you in the last lap. And I mean, say what you want. There's a ton of people that don't like Cooper Webb. Even Kaylee, our daughter, our 15-year-old daughter. What does she think of Cooper Webb, Karen?
Oh, she only doesn't like Cooper Webb just because he's the kryptonite to her favorite writer. That's what we call it in our house. Because she loves Ken Roczen and she has for many years now.
She liked Ken before we did.
Yeah, she totally did. And she's a trendsetter in the Brothers in House, you know, that Kaylee. But yeah, she loves Ken Roczen and she wants him to win so bad. And so anyone who's not Ken Roczen, she just doesn't really like anymore. So, but our boys, they are Coop Web fans. They are on the Coop train.
The web wagon,
all of it. Yes, our boys love Cooper. And they do like Ken Roczen too, so they're not haters, but Kaylee's more of a hater towards Cooper just because she likes Ken so much.
Yeah, she gets to the point where she doesn't want to watch the races if Cooper is up there towards the front.
Like, yeah.
And if you tell her, you know, that, you know, Ken Roczen did well, she'll watch the highlights. If you tell her that Cooper Webb won, then she won't even watch a highlight.
Yeah, she rolls her eyes and walks away.
Yeah, so the house is divided, but we've been divided for a long time. So last night, super awesome battle between Cooper Webb and Ken Roczen. Ken Roxon's leading the race for 15 minutes. And
he
then,
got the whole shot.
Yeah, he gets the Cooper, well, Ken, yeah.
Ken Roczen.
Ken Roczen gets the whole shot. Mm-hmm. Cooper Webb is in second. Eli Tomac is in third, and you got Justin Barcia right there. In fact, Barcia might have been in third, and then Eli took him, you know. But anyway, for most of the race, it was Ken 1, Cooper 2, and Eli 3. And I don't know. There's 15 minutes to go in the race, and Eli looked kind of like he was the Eli of old. We can talk about where the Eli of old has gone because I have some theories about that. But he looked like he was ready to win last night.
Yeah.
And he was in third, and I said to Karen, I'm like,
if he passes Cooper, he's going to pass Ken.
Because Karen's going, you know, Ken, keep it up, keep it up. And I'm going, the person who I think is going to win the race right now is actually Eli Tomac, who's in third. Because all for the last 5 years, you put that man in third place and he's gonna work you. And he's gonna like win going away. You know, like his problem has always been starts. He would start in like 13th and work his way through the pack and get second. Or sometimes if he started 10th, he would work through everyone and win. The thing right now is there's so much parity. There's so many good riders and they're so like close in lap times. It's gotten harder for Eli to do that. But here he was in third place and I thought he was going to win. And so you have, you know, Ken Roczen setting the pace. You got Cooper Webb breathing down his throat. And then you have Eli breathing down Cooper Webb's throat, and it was shaping up to be some really, really exciting racing. And we got some of it. We didn't get everything we could have because Eli Tomac ended up kind of pushing a little bit wide on the finish line jump with, I don't know, around 7 minutes-ish to go, 7-8 minutes to go, and he hit a tough block. And luckily, he didn't go down, but it slowed him down enough that Justin Barcia passed him. And then we had a little bit between Eli Tomac and Justin Barcia that was fun. But then
Eli's like, not today, bucko.
Yeah. And that was super fun to see. Like, like those guys, like they don't have any love for each other, you know? And so
they're
okay with banging each other, which is great. It's super great. Like they're not super dirty to each other.
I mean, it's fun for the crowd, but probably not for their moms. Yeah, you know?
They probably don't want to. Or their wives.
Is
Justin Barcia married? He's married now,
yeah,
I think so. They both got married. They both kind of settled down. So they're getting to be grumpy old men now.
Grumpy old men.
But then.
So, well, I think it's interesting because for the first little bit, you know, you've got 1, 2, and 3, Ken Roczen, Cooper Webb, and then Eli Tomac right there. And I just kept
thinking, the best riders in the sport.
Yeah, and I just kept thinking, oh man, if it just ended like this, I would be so happy. You know, or even if somebody else got in the mix, if Barcia passed a couple of them, I think that'd be so great. And then I thought, man, the pressure that's on Cooper was probably the greatest out of those three because he's trying to pass Ken Roczen or, you know, at least close the gap for a minute, but he's also got Eli Tomac right on his tail.
And defending champion.
And for a while, it was like that of the race. And I'm like, oh man, Cooper, he's a tough dude.
Like 10 minutes.
Yeah. Tough.
But
because Cooper was only 1 second to 2 seconds behind Ken Roczen. And then Tomac was 3 seconds behind the leader.
Or so, yeah. Well, there was only like 1 second gap, a lot of it
between all three. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was a 1 second buffer between each guy, and sometimes less, and sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less. So I get what you're saying, but I also feel like the pressure in my mind really was on Ken the entire time. Ricky Carmichael also always talks about how the pressure's on the leader. If you're close to the leader and you're in second place, he says like, it's you're in the better position because you get to watch that guy, see where he's better, watch what he's doing, pick it apart and figure out a way to pass him. And so I think that the pressure mostly was on Ken Roczen because he has to win. Like Ken Roczen right now, if he wants to win this championship, there is one thing that he has to do, and he has to beat Cooper Webb. Like you can't, nothing.
Now it's 15 like, point spread, right? Yeah.
Well, and last night it was a 12 point spread.
Yeah.
And think about it. He has lost the points lead. He had a pretty big points lead, but he got docked some points because of a red flat jumping on a red cross. He got docked some points because I can't even remember what it was, but he got the AMA took about 10 points from him so far this season in two different incidents. Man, think about how bad he wants those 10 points, which is why he was so upset about it earlier in the year, is because he knew 10 points is a lot. That's a big deal. Right now, he's now behind. He's in a 15-point hole. He'd love to have those 10 points back.
Yeah.
And to be honest, all of us would. All of us would rather have it be close than have it be further away. And so we're rooting for him, and he knows that. And so I think the pressure was all on him. And the fact that he kept it together for 15 minutes was really, really encouraging to me because, I mean, deserving, like, who deserves to win? I mean, it really gets subjective here. But if you look at what Ken Roczen has gone through the last 3 years of his life, how he almost lost his arm, you know, got multiple problems, you know, surgeries and different things, and he's able to fight back through it. And the dude is working with a bionic arm with pieces in his arm that are not even his, you know, 20 surgeries, and here he is still at the top of the game. he maybe doesn't have the same, like, he's not the same rider as he was in 2016 and 2017 before he got hurt, but he is still.
You mean mentally?
Mentally and physically. Remember in 2016 when he was racing against Dungy, 2016, 2017 worst. Before he got hurt? Like, he was terrifying. We were big Dungy fans at that time, and Ken Roczen was terrifying to us as the fans, because it was like, if he got out, if he was in second or third,
terrifying.
And your guy was in the front, he was a monster, and he was going to eat him for breakfast.
Yeah.
You know, and
we were so scared all the time.
And he really hasn't come back to that scary guy, that guy that everyone respects him, but they don't fear him. That's what I'm saying. He was feared in 2015, 2016, and I think it was 2017 before he got hurt. He raced a few races before he got really hurt there. People were terrified of him. But I don't think anyone's terrified of him now. They're just in awe by him. In the same way that Eli Tomac used to be terrifying, he's not terrifying anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and so you got this Ken Roczen guy who's just, he can't lose to Ken Cooper Webb anymore. He can't. And so he's like, I've got the worst case scenario. Not worst case. He wants to run races too, but he's like, I got Cooper Webb right behind me. I cannot afford a single mistake. I mess up one time, I drop back and they both pass me. I mean, that's what he's knowing. He's able to see that leaderboard thing, seeing how like the gap. And he's like, holy crap. I make one mistake and I go from first to third and the best two guys in the world besides me are going to pass me. How am I going to make that up? And so the pressure, like, can you imagine that type of pressure?
Yeah.
I mean, that's so crazy. What do you think, Karen, has happened with Eli Tomac? Because Eli Tomac, last night, he ends up finishing third. You're
the one with the deep theories on Tomac.
No, but I want to hear, like, what you tell the listeners. Give them a brief synopsis of what's going on with Tomac, because we haven't done this podcast for several weeks.
I speaking to the people who don't know Tomac or the people who do know Tomac? What are you asking me?
Both. Tell us what's going on with Tomac.
Okay. So, I mean, he won the championship and now he's trying to come back for round two. He got married, had a baby. You know, life has just been very different for him.
He got married last year and had the baby at the end of, right before he wrapped up the championship, I believe.
Yeah.
He was the first ever
dad,
first ever father to win the main title. And he did it only by a few weeks. He had the baby and then, you know, several rounds and he was done. Yeah. So that's the story. He was terrifying for so many years. And he finally got the monkey off his back last year in 2020 in Salt Lake, finally won a 450 title. He'd won multiple outdoor titles,
but not last year.
But he had never, So he'd won multiple 450 titles in motocross outdoors. And then this supercross thing had eluded him because of consistency, but he was still considered the fastest man on the track when he was on. And then he would have a bad start or a crash and he wouldn't win. But if he didn't make a mistake, he would win. That was basically what it was. So now what's going on with him?
That is on you. That is not on me. What do you think is going on with Tomac? Because I think he's just under pressure. And that's where I don't have anything very elaborate to say. So
I also wanted to do that race day live thing from the Instagram. But while Karen's pulling that up, Eli Tomac has been a totally different racer. You know, the one between Ken and Cooper, the one that you saw, that the Supercross thing. While Karen's finding that, Eli Tomac has just been a totally different rider. It's as if the fire went out. He still has bursts of speed. He still has great fitness. But there's just something missing that we have never seen before. Because when Eli Tomac was in the 250s, you know, many, many years ago, he was terrifying. And he was just like, when he was on, it was like you couldn't do anything with it. He had these battles with Ken Roczen when they were in the 250s. And it was like, who's on tonight and who's... And they were like two sides of a coin, you know? Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, they were both very good, little different
which
personalities.
One was which?
Which is which? And then suddenly now... They're both older. They both had their challenges, but Eli Tomac hasn't had that many like injuries. He's had a couple, but not anything super bad. And then all of a sudden, he wins the championship, and he comes back here in 2021, And he has just never shown that fire. He won once in like Houston, or I can't remember what it was. And then he won again in Daytona. But Daytona is such this race that he like owns Daytona. He's won like 5 out of the last 6 years in Daytona because it's just a different thing. But Eli Tomac is just, he's totally different. And it feels like the fire, like the drive is just, the flame is out.
Yeah.
Did you find the thing with Cooper? And so this is, so this is
just his, you know, interview after he won the main event. So
this first year really had some good speed, and I was just trying to hang out in tow. Eli was all over me, and I knew he was gonna be good tonight. Both those guys are really on it today, and I just focused on being consistent. I rode terrible in that heat race and didn't really like being put on the ground, so that was good. Fired me up, got me going for the main event. And man, to you know, ride with Kenny that whole race and make a late charge is awesome. Felt really, really good out there. And man, it's just incredible to get 3 here in Dallas is unheard of for me. And man, I'm just pumped. I want to give it up to the good Lord, the whole Red Bull KTM team, Thor, Alpine Star, Bell Helmets, 100%, Paradise Autos, all these fans for coming out tonight and rooting us on, my mechanic Carlos, my wife, and Dallas, you were good to me.
Yeah, Dallas. And Karen, try to find the other ones. If you can find Ken Roczen, or if you can find that little battle between him and Ken that they did on the TV broadcast, I'd be interested in hearing those. I think the listeners would be interested in hearing that. We need to do more of that. We were going to lead with that, and then we totally got...
No need to push it.
It was in this building 2 years ago, the closest finish in Supercross history, when Webb got Roczen in the end, and we were setting ourselves up for a beauty.
Oh my gosh, it's making me nervous watching it.
Oh, he got it. I thought Ken was going to run him high and take him to the hay bales, and he doesn't.
3:45 plus a lap. Cooper Webb takes the lead away from Ken Roczen, who got the whole shot and has led throughout.
Look at Cooper's going to go for the...
Yeah, so that was, thanks for pulling that up, yeah. Karen. That was so, it's so, like, I got chills and just listening to that. It was such exciting racing. It didn't really go the way Karen and I wanted, because we wanted Roczen to be able to, you know, hold that thing till the very end, and it looks like he held it almost 18 minutes. But he just
fades. He was only like 5 or 6 bike lengths from second place. I'm like, man, it was so close.
It was close. It was very close.
I mean, Kenny could basically feel the heat on the back of his neck because of how close they were, you know, when he went through the finish line.
Yeah, because she's saying they light the candles. They have this big flame thing going off and whatever. James Stewart that said like, yeah, you get a suntan on the back of your neck, because when you go across the finish line, they light those big old flamethrower things, and so it's like burning the back of your neck. So
yeah, I think of that every time.
So it's super. I mean, I loved it. I love the race. Both of us were a little disappointed that Kenny didn't win, because we're just pulling for him, and it's just starting to look now like, wow, Cooper Webb is probably going to wrap this thing up. They've got 6 more rounds. 5. They got 5 more rounds, because they got 3 in Hotlanta and then 2 in Salt Lake City. So they got 5 more rounds. Like, it's not done. If Cooper Webb has a problem, if he gets hurt at all, bam, Ken Roczen is right back in this thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, Ken Roczen, he led more laps than Cooper did, 19-7.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Cooper doesn't care about how many laps he leads.
I do. I care.
At the beginning of the season, Ken had led more laps than anyone. And now, after this stint, I think Cooper has led more laps in the season, or at least as many as anyone else.
Yeah,
and so Cooper has like 6 wins to Ken Roczen's 3.
Oh, yeah. Season laps led was 109 for Ken Roczen and 99 for Cooper. So Ken's still leading.
He's still leading in the laps led.
Yeah.
So Eli Tomac, just going back to him, it just feels like the fire is out, you know. And he's kind of out of it. He's about 41 points. I'm looking at this. Looks like he's 41 points behind Cooper Webb. So, I mean, Cooper almost has 2 full races ahead. You get 26 points for a win. You get 23 for a second place. So, Cooper could miss an entire round and still be several, many, many points ahead of Eli Tomac. So Eli, it's kind of, he's kind of 41? Out of
41?
Yeah, yeah, because...
No, it's only 15.
No, I said Cooper is 41 ahead of Eli Tomac.
Oh, Tomac, sorry, I squirreled.
Yeah, he's fifth. Cooper Webb is 15 ahead of Roczen, but it's 41 ahead of third place, who's Eli Tomac. So tell me about Justin Barcia. Like what's going on with Justin Barcia right now, Karen?
I don't know what's going on with him. He got fourth, didn't he?
Yeah, and he's fourth in the points in the championship.
Yeah, he's a consistent number four. He's doing well though. I mean, all things considered, and he does seem to be growing up. He's not as angry seeming. And I don't know. I think he's doing well.
He's riding a gas this year. He won the first round. He won the first round of the season, and he's just kind of been a one and done guy. He won the first round the last 3 years, and then he hasn't won after that. And I don't think he's going to win another one this year. I just don't. You know, it was funny. The other night, it wasn't this most recent race. It was the second race in Arlington. Me and the boys were downstairs watching it in the basement. And they had, I think he was in second. I think Justin Barcia was in second. Cooper Webb was in first or something like that. And it was really interesting because they showed Barcia. He got a bunch of screen time for a few minutes. And you watch him, and he's fun to watch ride. He didn't have anyone behind him. He was kind of riding his own race there. Had a gap behind him and in front of him, but he looked like he was charging hard. And you watch him, and he looks like he's riding the heck out of the bike. He's just like pushing it into the corners and then just like giving it a fistful of throttle, and kind of the back end of the bike kind of wags out as he spins out of the corner and whatever. And then they showed Cooper Webb, and Cooper Webb is the exact opposite of that. He doesn't look like he's riding the bike hard. Cooper Webb is all about efficiency. The back end of the bike doesn't whip out. You know, Cooper Webb will take the inside of the turn, whereas typically speaking, Justin Barcia will be on the outside of a turn, rail the top of the berm and whip around and look like he's going so much faster. But in the end, Cooper Webb is, he can't make up any time on Cooper Webb. So here, Justin Barcia looks like he's more fun to watch ride, yeah. You know, but yeah. but the
and
end
he
result
seems strong. I don't know.
But the end result, it's like, well, you obviously are wasting a lot of energy. You're wasting a lot of energy because Cooper Webb is doing this same thing. He's putting down the same lap time, if not faster. And, you know, so that's kind of an interesting thing. And Tomac in years past was kind of like that. It looked like he was fun to watch ride because it looked like he was so freaking fast. So he probably wasn't the most efficient rider, and I don't think Justin Barcia is. But he's fun to watch ride. So Barcia, he's kind of right in there. You've got up Marvin Muscan. What do you have to say about Marvin?
So we saw that Marvin, it wasn't on TV as far as I could see, but he, for whatever reason, was over on the side in the middle of the race talking to his mechanic, Carlos, my good buddy.
Not Carlos.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It was the other guy. What's his name?
Frankie Latham.
He's a cool guy. Anyway, and so we were kind of just beside ourselves, like, wait, what's happening to Marv? Because he missed last week because of like a protocol for
concussion.
A concussion. And I just looked up his Instagram to see if he had posted anything, and he did. He said, we were excited to go back racing after missing Arlington 2, but today's main event didn't go as I expected. I made a mistake in the sand section, and another rider collided with me. We both went down, and my wrist was banged. We did not finish the race. So is that Chase Sexton that went with him? Because he was at that bottom of that list.
Chase got annihilated in the sand.
I wonder if they were together. I don't know.
I don't know.
Speculating here.
Chase was really bad. His visor was off his helmet and everything. And Chase had gotten that good heat. You know, he got second in the heat race. But then something happened in the sand. It's so amazing. I tell you, we'll get to this in just a minute.
Why do we have sand? I don't understand.
Well, Tomac has asked that. He's like, why do we have sand in Supercross?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not a dirt biker by any means, but whenever I have been on and I hit like a patch of sand, I feel like I'm on ice, and I hate that feeling. Like, hate it. And they're going so fast, and I don't know. There's technical spots sometimes with a turn or whatever, and they're in sand. And then it's like crazy roost for the people behind them, and It's a mess.
I think they just do it for an equalizer. I mean, I don't think any of the riders like it. Just if the whole race was in sand, it would be one thing. But where you've got hard pack and or ruts and then sand, it just makes it challenging. And honestly, I can't complain too much because the whole thing, like Supercross is supposed to be hard. You know,
yeah,
I mean, if we're like, oh, we need to take this out because it's too hard, then they can take the whoops out. You know, the whoops are the hardest thing.
Hey, Jason Anderson took the whoops out. So
for those of you that didn't see in Arlington 2, Jason Anderson, there was kind of like a few riders got tangled up in the corner right before the whoops, and they were kind of blocking the trail a little bit. And Jason Anderson comes around and kind of gets like,
but barely blocking it.
But Jason Anderson like kind of comes around, bumps his front tire into somebody. He does a little bit of a pivot turn, puts himself like straight into the tough block, pointed right down the whoops in the middle where there are no whoops, and he just goes boom, jumps right over the tough block and starts banging gears right alongside the whoops.
Yeah.
And it was like so egregious track cutting. Yeah. I think they ended up docking him something.
I never looked.
Some positions or something, but it's like, yeah, dude, you weren't supposed to do that. You're supposed to get back on the track and go down the whoops. But he's sitting there thinking, well, I can't go down the whoops that slow. I don't have any drive. I'm not going to make it through the whoops. I can't start in the whoops. So he probably has some reason why he did it. But if he would have just gone down slowly, down through the whoops, but he went along the side. He went through the side of the whoops as fast as you could ever go through the whoops anyway. And I think that was where the problem was.
Yeah. Sorry. I squirreled us again. No,
it's fine. Justin, I mean, if you think, talk
I'm
about
the resident squirreler around
here. You talk about Jason Anderson, though, and he was the 2018 champion, had a really good year. And then 2019 comes out,
gets injured.
Oh, no. Take it back. No, he was 18. That's right. So he was 18, and then he comes out in 19, only races 3 rounds, gets injured, and then he comes out in 2020 and does nothing.
Yeah, one-hit wonder.
And then this year, he's kind of done nothing.
I hope he does well.
He's starting to get a little bit more aggressive, and he's done some aggressive things, which I think is totally fine. He had some scrutiny from the AMA because he passed, you know, Bubba Stewart hard, and Bubba then decided to retaliate and come back and crash himself. And then he passed Dylan Ferrandis hard, and Dylan goes down. But I didn't think Jason Anderson did anything wrong in any of those moves. He's just
trying to win.
And even
Ricky Carmichael had Jason's back. He's like, yeah, that's racing, you know? Yeah,
totally racing.
So, speaking of squirreling, I was wondering how you feel about mixing Supercross with a jungle gym. Have you ever thought of that?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
There was a guy riding a dirt bike for a minute, and then he was all of a sudden climbing a big pole and a net.
It's something they do in Australia, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, my mom heart hurt for him.
250s. She's talking about 250s. Hunter Lawrence. He happened to have the red plate at the time. So he's racing in the 250. Is it 250 West? I can't even remember. Yeah, 250. I can't even remember.
No, we're on the West East Coast now, right?
I think we're in the West. They're not racing on the West or the East because the West won't let them race because they're afraid of the Rona. Either way, I can't even remember if it's West or East. But the point is, Hunter Lawrence, he's a rookie-ish. I mean, I don't know if he's a rookie. He's raced a lot in different areas. He's young, but he's raced a lot, but he hasn't raced a ton in Supercross because he's gotten hurt. His brother, Jet Lawrence, is racing the other 250 division. Anyway, he ended up as the red plate holder this race by like 1 point or whatever. Hunter Lawrence, he's shown a lot of really good speed and some good stuff. And then he overjumps one of the rhythm lanes at the end of the rhythm lane. He overjumped it by, I would say, somewhere around a foot.
Maybe
2 feet. And because of that, he just goes ripping up the bull turn in one of these huge bolt 180 turns, and the bike goes flipping right over the turn through the tough block and up into the net, and he grabs on, like, you'll have to look at it.
Koala bear hugs onto a pole.
He pounded the pole, and the poles are wrapped in a bunch of foam and everything. But I mean, it was crazy.
It was crazy.
And the net kept the bike from like flying into the stands. You know, and it's just so amazing to me what I see, what I notice from that is just there's like no margin for error. We're sitting here watching, and it's one thing like, okay, so you're watching golf. Like golf was super boring to me as a teenager until I actually went and played golf when I was 15, 16. And then I was like mesmerized by golf. I could watch it on TV because I could see how insanely difficult it was. And it is. And it's hard to hit a fastball and it's hard to catch a pass and all of these things.
All in golf, he's talking about.
I'm talking about football, baseball, basketball. Joking. It's hard to dunk on LeBron James or whatever. But the thing is, like, you're doing 30 miles an hour on this motorcycle that weighs 250 pounds and it has, 50 horsepower or whatever. And you overjump the thing by 4 inches. And next thing you know, you're wrapping yourself around a pole because you did 4 inches too far. And I ride dirt bikes all the time. Well, not all the time, but I ride dirt bikes. I try to ride once a week. And I don't do things where it's like 3 inches and I die.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he
got launched off of that ramp.
And it's just so crazy. There's no room for error. The fact that these guys can do these rhythm lanes in the 250s and the 450s and just like, oh, we're going to double this one. Oh, we're going to triple this one. Oh, we're going to quad this one. I'm going to quad into it. You got these big, long rhythm lanes. And it's like, they look at it and they try to figure out what's the fastest way through it. And like, oh, I'm going to single in. I'm going to then seat bounce and triple. And then I'm going to try to quad into the turn.
Yeah.
You know, but if you miss that quad by 2 feet or 1 foot, you crash and your season is over and you broke your collarbone.
Yeah.
And your wrist and you tore your ACL. I mean, it's just like, it's like the fact that they can do this is, to me, even the more I ride, the more I ride dirt bikes, the more I'm amazed by watching these guys. And we've got tickets to go down to, we got our tickets for Salt Lake. And I told the boys on that first one that because we're going to go to both the races in Salt Lake. And I told the boys, we're just going to camp out and watch the qualifying. Because I don't know how much of the pit area you're going to be able to get walk around in because they've kind of got that stuff shut down. But I just want to camp out and watch the 250s and the 450s, just qualify and practice. Just get as close down to the track as we can because our seats are up a little bit higher for the racing. I like to be a little bit higher for the races so you can see more of what's going on. But in qualifying, I just want to go to a couple different positions, several different positions throughout the day and just get down as close as we can to the track and just watch these guys. It's poetry in motion. It is like...
Especially when you're down close to the race and they're doing their qualifying and their bikes are sky high and zooming so fast. And you take it for granted when you're watching it on TV.
Because it flattens it out.
It flattens it out. It kind of even makes it look slower, it feels like. But when you're in person and you're watching these young kids on dirt bikes just flying through the sky.
And the jump faces are like straight up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, they look, you cannot understand how difficult this is just by watching it on TV. No. You have to go and look at it in person and then you have to ride a motorcycle and be like, oh my gosh, this is impossible. And then like track walk. So a couple times have been able to do track walk. That's an experience.
That is an experience. Even just walking up and over the whoops, which if you don't know are the smallest bumps on the track. It's like slippery and it's steep. I'm just struggling to get up over a whoop by walking.
It's the thing people are the most afraid of all the time. You know, it's funny because if when you're doing the qualifying, you know, if you're on a fast lap, what people call a hot lap to put down that time, then you'll go on the whoops. But if you're not on hot lap, you typically just go around the whoops. You don't do that anywhere else on the track. You're just like, oh, I'm not on a hot lap, so I'm not going to jump the finish line jump. You know, yeah. I've never jumped anything like a finish line jump, but those guys, it doesn't matter if they're on the hot lap or not, they'll whoop just over the finish line jump. And they'll even do like to triple unless they're waiting, trying to get some space in front of them.
Yeah,
they're like, oh, I'll just do this 90-foot triple or whatever because it's no big deal. But the whoops, it's like, if I'm not on the hot lap, I'm probably just going around the edge because those are the thing. If I'm going to get hurt, like they know people like crash in the whoops all the time because it's like the most difficult thing out there. Yeah. Anyway, so the 250s, it's been really fun. The 250s, up until last night, they had four races and four different winners, Karen. Last night, Justin Cooper wins.
That's why the points are so equal.
Yeah, last night, Justin Cooper won last night. He's got a two-point lead, and then you've got only a six-point gap between him and third place. So Justin Cooper is the only guy in this division to have won a race twice so far in the 250 division. The other winners were Cameron McAdoo, Seth Hamaker, and Hunter Lawrence. And so it's been really quite a lot of parity right there. There have been a lot of injuries in the 250s on both coasts, the 250 West and the 250 East. But I mean, I've said it before and I'll say it again. If you're a fan of Supercross, you got to be watching the 250 stuff. A lot of times the racing in the 250s is a little bit more exciting. I don't know. It's almost like they have more trying to prove more, and maybe they're taking some risks that the 450 guys have kind of graduated out of. They're not quite as consistent, and it makes for actually some really, really interesting riding. And you get to see, you know, who the stars are coming up.
Well, and don't you think with that, 450s seem to have more of an even keel of caliber of riders, but 250s, it feels like there's some that are just beginning and some that have been there for a minute. And it seems like there's more of a spread of their talents and capabilities.
Yeah.
Than there are in the 450s.
So. You're totally right. I think what you're trying to say is there's a wider range of talent.
Yes,
there's a wider range of talent in the 250s than there is in the 450s. You still get some of the guys that are qualifying for the 450 that, you know, they have no business being there and they're getting lapped a couple times. But to Karen's credit, there's like in the 450s, you'll have 12 guys that like are really good and 12 guys that have won. In fact, put it this way. When you're in the 450, you'll probably have 10 out of the 20 people that are 250 champions.
Yeah.
You know, whereas in the 250, you usually have one guy, maybe two in the 20 people that line up that have won a 250 championship. You know, and so the range of your talent is much broader in the 250s as far as from the top guys to the bottom guys. Because let's face it, some of the guys in the 250 are qualifying just as fast, if not maybe just barely off of what the 450 guys are qualifying. It's just the 450 guys are more polished. Their racecraft is a little bit better. Maybe they're making better decisions consistently throughout the races. And so it puts them like, you know, head and shoulders above some of these other guys in the 250s, but they have amazing, amazing talent and ability in the 250, and you get to see who's coming up. So Justin Cooper wins last night. Cameron McAdoo was second. We're really starting to like Cameron McAdoo. I mean, I do.
Yeah, he's fun, and it's fun to say.
McAdoo.
McAdoo.
Cameron
McAdoo. We have to give a big shout out to Garrett Lawrence, by the way. He's fourth in the points right now. He's tied for fourth and fifth.
No, Garrett Marchbanks is in.
He's tied for
fourth. Tied for fourth with Jalik Swole.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. See, I had to pay attention to my Utah guys. So yeah, he's from Colville, Utah.
Who's your other Utah guy then?
Oh, Piff. I don't know.
Well,
I thought you
said you pay. He's in dead last.
Pierce Brown. Now that's right.
Here's something to say about the 250 class. You start looking through here. KTM needs to get on it and sign a bloody 250 rider. They've got no one in. Like Pierce Brown is a KTM guy, but they don't have, in fact, yeah, because he didn't race last night, but I'm pretty sure he's a 250 guy. Look at the box score for the 250 main event. Do you see a single KTM there? Well, you do. Mm-hmm. There's Cameron Follentain or Fonville, Calvin Fonville in 19th. I don't know how to pronounce it. Fonville. And then you've got Michael Hicks. Those guys are like privateer guys, I think. So KTM doesn't even have a single like factory or even like quasi factory guy even racing last night. Like they need to get on that and sign some people. Because you look, you've got a Yamaha, two Kawasaki's, a Husqvarna, Honda, Yamaha, Gas Honda, and then Yamaha's, you know, to fill out your top 12.
Yeah.
KTM has nobody. They've got to sign some people. You know what I mean?
Yep, they sure do.
You get the right guy on any of these bikes, like Justin Cooper. He's on a Yamaha, you know, YZ250F. I mean, they're amazing bikes. But Justin Cooper could do just as well on any color of bike. It's about the rider. Obviously, the team comes into it, and certain bikes maybe favor the riders a little bit more. But, I mean, if you're a good rider, you can make it. And if you got a good mechanic and good team behind you, you can make that bike work. It doesn't matter what color it is. It doesn't matter if it says Kawasaki, Gas, KTM, Husky, whatever. You can make it work. KTM needs to sign a bloody rider for the 250s.
Yeah.
Especially where they've got Cooper Webb. He's like, obviously the guy. But Marvin Muscan looks like he's kind of a little bit over the hill and he's getting injury prone. And so they've got to bring somebody into the KTM like on the 450s and the 250 is kind of like your developmental league, you know?
Too bad, because I love Marv.
Yeah.
Marv and Matil.
But the 250s have been fun. So you were talking about Garrett, how he's been doing well, Garrett Marchbanks.
Yeah.
What do you think about Jalik Swole?
Oh, that was a fun win. He was the one that won, right?
I don't think Jalik won. I think
he got second.
He was on the podium
last round. Yeah, it was so great to see him win and get on the podium. He won me over with his interview. Not gonna lie, he just seemed so grateful, and he got emotional, and I just was really just happy for him to podium. You could tell how grateful he was that he finally did it, you know, and I loved it.
Speaking of emotions, so Hunter Lawrence got his first race win a race ago. I think it was Arlington 2.
That was 2. The same race day.
So tell me about the emotion there from Hunter Lawrence.
So he finishes he gets his suntan and he finishes first, and then he like drops his bike, hugs his mechanic, and then falls to the ground just sobbing. You could see his shoulders shaking, and he was just crying in gratitude. And I got emotional just watching him, because you could just see how hard he's worked. And a few of his interviews, they must know more about his personal life than I do, but they were saying, you have overcome so much. And he would respond with something like, you have no idea, mate, you know? And so,
yeah, well, it's because he, you know, he did well in a couple of like these other divisions. He raced in Europe. I think he raced a little bit in Australia. Could be wrong on that one, but he's raced a lot of different things to get to this point. And then he comes over, you know, graduates, hey, I'm ready for Supercross. He comes over and he gets injured. He was out for 2 full years because every time he would get on the bike, he would get injured. And it was like every time he'd crash, he would get injured. And it was so frustrating for him, from what I've heard, because you see people crash all the time and they just like jump back up. You know, obviously people get injured, but the point is you see people crash in heat races and then hard and then still are able to get up and race the main. You see people crash in qualifying practice hard and then put a different visor on the helmet that they just broke off and go and actually win that night. Like that happened to Cooper Webb on Arlington 2. He had a crazy crash in the whoops in Arlington 2.
The face of a whoop.
And just pounded into a whoop, really hard get off. And then he goes out and he wins the bloody main event. The thing with Hunter Lawrence is he would have a little crash and it was like, boom, tear something.
Yeah.
And so for 2 years, he just couldn't catch a break. And so now he goes and it was like his sixth race or something like that, fifth or sixth race. And he was getting like, you know, sixth place and then fourth place and then second place. And then boom, he gets the race win. And like Karen said, he just comes, he like strolls the bike over to his mechanic, drops the bike on the ground, hugs his mechanic, and just is overcome. And if you know anything about how hard these kids are working, I mean, that makes you, whether you're a fan of him or not, that is so fun to see, because you're just like, who?
So I mean, deserving.
When's the last time in your life you worked for something so freaking hard that when it happened, you just broke down crying?
Yeah.
I can think of a time or two in my life when that happened, and it's amazing. I mean, so it's fun to watch. And that was our boy Hunter Lawrence. And then last night, the race didn't go exactly how he wanted. He ends up in fifth. Obviously, he loses the red plate. So now he's behind. Hunter Lawrence is now in third. So he's behind by 6. So he had a 7-point swing last night because he was ahead by 1. Now he's behind by 6. But I mean, it's still in there. I mean, it's still there. He's right there. The points are tight, especially those top 3 guys, Justin Cooper, Cameron McAdoo, Hunter Lawrence. Any one of those guys could take this championship. And they're all good riders.
Yeah.
Karen and I aren't as much of a fan of Justin Cooper. There's something about his personality that I don't love. I think Cameron McAdoo and Hunter Lawrence are a little bit more likable. Obviously, Justin Cooper is an amazing rider. There's just something about his personality that I don't like as much.
I'm a fan of Swole now.
Yeah, Jalik Swole. He's a pretty cool customer. Seth Hamaker also. Seth Hamaker he won the other night. He's a rookie, and I think he got his first race win the other night. Like that Hamaker, he was either first, second, or third. Anyway, Seth Hamaker is rookie. You know, he's having a good year, doing some pretty cool stuff. So Yeah, I mean, it's fun to watch. We love watching Supercross. I apologize that we haven't had more of these, you know, podcasts out. We've already made all our excuses for why that hasn't happened, but yeah. It's a pretty cool thing. And coming down to the wire here, if I can just talk Karen into spending a couple, like a day and a half with me, maybe I could get her down here to Hotlanta.
Hello. I'm the one that said I want to go. So that was the place I voted for.
Yeah. It's our schedule. We got to just look at it and see if we can make it happen. But the other thing is you gotta start like bringing in all the bacon, because I can't bring enough bacon to get us to Hotlanta.
I'm working on it.
So, anyways, I think that's what we have. Do you have anything else?
No, we've kept these people for a whole hour now. They're still listening.
These people like it. The people who are listening to it now, you don't need to apologize to them. You know? It's the people who dropped off like a half hour ago.
Our moms are listening.
No, there's dudes and gals maybe, but there's at least dudes who are listening to these podcasts all the way through. I tell you what, if you're listening to this podcast all the way through, here's what you do.
Oh, yeah.
You send Kyle an email to kyle@dirtbikechannel.com and you say, hey, I'm listening
to these podcasts. Or Karen at Dirtbike Channel.
Oh, yeah, we do have that.
I think so.
But I don't even think you're looking at
that. No, I never do. You're right.
And I'm not
just
looking at
Kyle.
It. So do Kyle at Dirtbike Channel. Give us any, you know, podcast topics that you're thinking of. If you want me to go away and Karen to just take this thing over, you can also tell me that. And
totally. There. I'll tell you all about the carburetors and
the Kelly carburetors. Yeah. Yeah.
That's for another day.
Oh, well, that's good. I'm glad that we finally got able to do it. There's a couple weeks off for Supercross, so they're not going to race for a couple weeks. I think the next one is actually April 10th. So I got like 3 weeks off. Yeah, because they went from March 10th to April 10th. So then they go April 10th, April 13th, and April 17th. So three races there in a week. It's their residency in
Hotlanta. If we get there, it'll be April 17th.
You think it will?
Yeah.
Is that the one?
Because the other one's spring break.
Oh, yeah. But if we did that, then I would go to the last three races.
We can calendar this later after we hit the red button. Hit the red button.
I don't want to hit the red button.
Thanks for listening, everyone. If you're still here.
You go ahead and leave it. Take us out.
I'm not taking us out.
She won't do it. I don't know.
I sound like Minnie Mouse on helium. You take us out.
I don't know why she won't use this tagline. The tagline is...
I did it once.
Leave... Oh, and by the way, if you want to support Dirtbike Channel, use the links for Rocky Mountain ATV. Go to my website, dirtbikechannel.com. Get yourself some gear over there. There are no sponsors for this podcast. If you want this podcast to continue, you got a couple ways to do it. You can use the links that we have on dirtbikechannel.com for Rocky Mountain ATV.
Amazon. That's a really cool,
Amazon, also a great way to do it. You can also, though, just go buy yourself a t-shirt, or go buy yourself a toe strap, or buy yourself some tie downs, or a hat, or a hoodie, or a jacket, or socks. I mean, like, everything I wear is Dirt Bike Channel stuff. Today I'm wearing a shirt and tie, so I don't wear any dirt, but I have Dirt Bike Channel. Dirt Bike Channel socks on.
You have Dirt Bike Channel.
There's never a day when I'm not wearing a DBC something, because I have a lot of it kicking around from all the years of doing this stuff. So thank you so much for your support, and we will catch you guys on the flip side. Leave a single track.